This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. In tonight's show, David Elliott joins us with the Inside the Beltway from Washington, and I'm sure we'll have a few things to talk about tonight. Charmin Petrie, one of the organizers of the event of the Women's Festival, will be on. We'll be interviewing Dr. Susan Lawrence, author of Creating a Healing Society. And the Alley Theater's Act Out series starts a new season with Much Ado About Nothing. With us from the Alley Theater is Adrian Perez, publicity manager, and costumer Michael Ferris. All that's on, and I'm Jack Falinski.
I'm Deborah Bell.
And Jennifer Renee.
J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
Okay.
But wait, there's more.
There's more?
It's Jennifer's birthday.
Happy birthday
to Jennifer. So this show is all about Jennifer.
They all aren't.
No.
I didn't see it on the rundown.
We surprised you. No. You're just part of tonight, but an important part.
I'm the cake at the end of the show.
There you go.
If we make it to the end of the show. Well, but up first, we have David Elliott joining us from Washington. And, David, first of all, I want to thank you for dinner last week. It was very nice seeing you again after a few years.
Well, Jack, thank you, and it was really great seeing you. But, you know, we've got lots of news to report tonight.
Boy, isn't it incredible? I mean,
let's get right to it,
yes,
shall we?
Yes, go for it.
Okay. Jack, the Republican leadership of the U.S. House of Representatives is in complete and total meltdown
it
in Washington, D.C. this evening. It is the type of meltdown that has not been seen in American politics since the days of Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky, Altoids, and a stained blue dress. 4 days ago, few Americans knew the name of former Congressman Mark Foley. This evening, however, many Americans know that this past Friday, the Republican Foley suddenly and abruptly resigned his seat in Congress after electronic transmissions between him and a 16-year-old congressional page were revealed. Now, tonight, the story continues to unfold at a breathtaking pace. Indeed, the entire House Republican leadership is threatened by the scandal, which promises to dominate the front pages of newspapers in the coming weeks. And, you know, before all is said and done, before the new Congress is seated in January 2007, we could well see three key Republican leaders relinquish positions of power.
Really?
Yes. House Speaker Dennis Hastert,
wow.
Majority Leader John Boehner, and Tom Reynolds, who heads up the House reelection effort for the Republicans, and who, ironically, might actually lose his own seat on November 7th.
Wow.
Now, Jack, there's an axiom in American politics that's important to remember. It's not the original sin that gets you in hot water.
Yes, yes, yes.
It's the cover-up.
Hello. Brownie points to whoever said that.
That was Jennifer.
That's Jennifer? Thank you, Jennifer.
You're
That's
welcome.
What we're dealing with here. What did the Republican leadership know, and when did it know it?
Actually, when did it stop knowing it?
Yeah.
Well, and true. And,
it gives me the creeps to hear that phrase again.
And you know, I want to, before I discuss the larger implications of this evolving Republican scandal, I really want to offer up a couple of words of caution.
Well, and a little bit prefix here. If anybody who is younger and doesn't remember the 60s, there's a movie playing right now at the River Oaks called John Lennon versus the U.S., and
it's
a fabulous movie. And when you look at it, it's you know, as much as it's about John Lennon, it's also about the time, the you know, all the stuff that happened during the Vietnam War, the illegal war, all that stuff that was going on. And you look at today, and it's sort of the same thing. And all that stuff going with Nixon, it wasn't so much what Nixon did, it was a cover-up of Nixon. And then we fast forward to 2006, and...
Well, bingo.
And then there's like this word that is Henry Kissinger. There's this alternative plan that's in the works or that he's been part of creating that, as they say, deja vu all over again. That he's recreating what happened in Vietnam.
Yes, but coming back to the current scandal, let us offer some precautionary words. Because it is not clear that Republican Mark Foley has committed a crime. Remember, first off, folks, that no evidence exists that he engaged in sexual relations with any congressional page. And let us remember, second, that the age of consent in most states, including Florida, including Washington, D.C., is 16. It's not 18, as many people believe. But let us remember, third, that Republican Mark Foley hypocritically sponsored legislation that penalizes efforts to seduce minors over the Internet.
Yes.
And let us finally remember that there is a vague and unsettling undercurrent of anti-gay bias attendant to this story. Let's be clear. The issue is not that Republican Mark Foley pursued 16-year-old boys. The issue, rather, is that Republican Mark Foley, as part of an apparent campaign of sexual harassment, pursued underage congressional pages, and that these efforts apparently were not disclosed by the House Republican leadership, which evidently knew about them. Now, if I may, and this is the last point I want to make on this, I want to move on to the larger picture.
Well, in what was interesting today, or yesterday, I guess, Newt Gingrich said, well, if they did something about this, we might be considered gay bashing. Now, what logic is that?
Well, coming from a former Speaker Gingrich, Jack, that's very strange logic indeed.
Yes.
But how does this affect the larger picture? How does this affect that?
Are you asking us or are you going to tell us?
I'm going to tell you, Deb.
I was hoping so.
At this point in time, it is impossible for me to imagine any scenario whatsoever in which Democrats do not capture the U.S. House of Representatives. No scenario. None. Period. The question now is, does the spillover to the Senate? Spill over to the dozens of governor's races and thousands of state legislative races across the country? The answer is, well, to some extent, it certainly does. To what extent, we just don't know yet. But remember, there are still, and this is a new development, folks, there are still 36 pages of electronic transmissions between Republican Mark Foley and various former congressional pages that have yet to be released to the public.
Well, and we also have that book out by Bob Woodward, who just basically, and now he's even has proof that every time the administration's trying to discount his book, and he's showing, you know, he's now revealing the background of his book.
Well, and that's true. And, you know, it's almost like an exaltation of riches, Jack, because we have one story stepping on another, and it's like, do you really want the stuff involving Republican Mark Foley to step on, you know, the far more critical and far more important question of what are we doing in Iraq? why are we there, and what's going to happen in the future?
Plus the incompetence of what they, you know, besides doing the wrong thing, they also did it badly.
You know, I could say something about that, Chuck, but I'd just be piling on, and I think I've been doing that all evening.
Well, that's an interesting point, and it is typical that it's like the smoke and mirrors thing. Look over here, and we're going to pay attention to this, and grant you it's despicable in many ways. I have issue with, not that it's gay bashing, but it's like the thing that he did that was bad reflects on the gay community, even though he isn't part of the gay community, and pedophilia is not at all the same thing as being queer. So I don't want, you know, it's that same thing as they say with J. Edgar Hoover. We didn't want him, okay? But
And in fact, Deb, I mean, it's been well established that sexual abuse of minors tends to happen most often involving heterosexual men and underage girls.
Exactly. And every time a heterosexual person does something, it doesn't blast all the other heterosexuals.
Right.
And the negative is much more on that side. And yet, we're a minority, you know?
And you know, it's important to point out, I mean, Republican former Congressman Mark Foley is one of the most aggressive people in terms of denying his sexual orientation. I mean, the guy once even called a press conference to announce that he was going to refuse to say whether or not he was gay or straight. He's the most outed person of any member of Congress in modern history.
Wow.
Yeah.
What is going on, David? Because, look, you have Matt Greavey from New Jersey. There was a guy who was, what, up in Oregon?
The former mayor of Spokane, Washington. Right.
And it's not just that, oh, hello, I'm a politician and I'm coming out as gay. It's been through scandal. It's been through misbehavior.
Well, and these are the people who came to office because they were supposedly have the better morals. And there were three Republican congressmen that resigned this year.
And it's not just Republicans. I mean, the Democrats are an exempt from some of the,
you're right.
So-called flimmin' on the flim-flam, as my dad used to say. But, David, this is something that's really going to provide something for us to be watching over the next few weeks. And like you say, it will have a result in how the voting takes place. But we did have some good news I'd like for you to comment about, and that is about the ruling that came out of Rhode Island.
Deb, you've got me completely at a loss.
Actually, it was a ruling in Massachusetts. Though.
Was it a ruling?
The fact that gay and lesbian couples in Rhode Island can now go to Massachusetts and get married and come home, and their marriages will, in fact, be validated. They will be recognized.
They'll be recognized within Rhode Island, and it was a lesbian couple that brought this case. That's exactly what I was talking about. And this, David, is what happens when you're sitting on the computer all day trying to put the radio show together, and you keep getting messages and about many different things that are going on, and it just seems like a lot of, maybe it's because we're approaching a full moon.
Well, it's also the first Monday in October.
That's
right.
The Supreme Court.
And it's my birthday.
And it's Jennifer's birthday. Yes, the first Monday in October is the day the court takes, what do they call it, David? They're seated for the session?
Yes, they announce, you're exactly right. They announce which cases they're going to accept for review for the upcoming term. It's an ongoing process, but basically the Supreme Court comes back from their summer vacation. They have a little bit longer vacation than, you know, the rest of us normal folk. And you know, they sift through hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cases and announce which ones they're going to accept and which ones they're not going to accept. But, you know, it's folks, we're 36 days out from the election.
Yes.
5 weeks in one day. In some states, like up in South Dakota, they've already started early voting. They're actually voting now, right now.
Well, and also, it is also a lot of local elections, too. And we're dealing with that here in Houston and in Harris County, that we not only are electing senators and governors, but we're also electing state representatives and judges. And as much as the top part of the ticket's important, so is the bottom part. And we also actually have some questions that we're going to be voting on concerning the way the city finances things. So all of that is important. And the Houston GLBT Political Caucus will be printing a... well, and also you can actually look at the website right now, which is hglbtpc.org, on where the endorsements are so far. But they will be mailing out cards. And you can pick them up locally at the businesses around Montrose if you're interested in the way the endorsement process went and who the caucus is endorsing.
Yeah, and we're trying to have that information out before the early voting again. Well, David, thank you again for being with us on Queer Voices.
And David, tell us what your day job is.
Well, Jack, for my day job, I work for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. You can find us at www.ncadp.org. Again, that's ncadp.org. And just as a side note, you know, we're dealing with a very exciting election season right now. And if you all want me on in any of the upcoming Mondays, you know, in addition to the first Monday of November, just give me a ring.
Okay. Thank you, David.
Thank you, David.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
This is JD, and in a moment, you're going to hear a lot more about that artist, Patrice Pike.
This is Queer Voices.
And you're going to hear a lot more about Patrice Pike and lots of other fantastic women musicians because it's that time of year again, you know, when they put out the pumpkins and the harvest corn and all that good stuff. And the Women's Festival takes place in Houston, the Houston Women's Festival. And with us are Shirley Knight and Charmin Petrie. And Shirley, now you're one of the founders of...
That's right.
And when did it start? Because I know that it seems like it just started recently, but it's been quite a while now.
The first festival was in 1995, and after that, we started a nonprofit organization, the Athena Art Project. We founded that in 1996.
Now, the first one took place where?
It was a small venue east of downtown, and it was called The Hangar, and it was the beginning of the festival as we know it today.
It was basically outside, though.
It was basically outside. There actually was an indoor, it used to be an airplane hangar.
Yeah.
And that's where the nighttime show was.
Was there anyone of note that performed at that event?
Gretchen Phillips was there, and a band called Velvet Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, Gretchen's my bud.
Yeah.
Right, yeah. Oh, she loves you, JD.
we have a mutual love fest with Gretchen. And so then what happened next?
Next, we moved to a venue called Garden in the Heights, and we were very happy there for a number of years. And the festival really grew and flourished, and we had our biggest event there and definitely had good turnout. And that property was sold, and there's high-rise condominiums there now. So,
I never knew what happened.
It was a great venue.
Yeah. It was a great venue, and people really liked it and really felt at home.
And you had
there.
Outdoor space and indoor space. And
that's correct.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, over the years, well, see, was that the only venue it was in until you started going to Jones Plaza?
That's right.
And then tell people where Jones Plaza is.
Jones Plaza is downtown in the theater district. It's across from the Alley Theater and Jones Hall and the Angelica Theater. And it's a nice venue. It's owned by the city. The facilities are good.
Nice restrooms.
Nice restrooms. Air-conditioned restrooms.
Yeah.
Plenty of them.
How's parking?
Parking, they've gone up on the parking there. So if you want to park underground, it is $6. And they do charge at meters now downtown. But there's a lot of parking lots around the area.
Mm-hmm. Pretty accessible.
That's right.
All in all.
Mm-hmm.
And
you can always ride your bike.
Now, what happened 1 year?
Yeah.
Well, the worst thing that can happen was...
Well, we had, the last 3 years, we had rain, I guess, 2 years ago. And then the year after that, it rained a lot in the area, not on the festival, but there was a lot of rain in the area, so it kept some people away. And then, of course, last year we had Hurricane Rita
mm-hmm.
threaten on the day of our festival.
And so it got postponed.
It got rescheduled.
Yes,
and then
some of the artists that were supposed to attend the original event couldn't make it.
That's
for
right.
the mm-hmm. postponed one, or what was the word?
Rescheduled.
Rescheduled.
That's
one.
Right.
So you actually split off, and in February had...
A Winterfest,
which it was a pretty nice day.
It was a nice day.
It was not
day.
A cold day.
It wasn't
very cold. It got a little chilly in the evening.
That's right. It was sunny.
And that was way out at
Clear Lake,
which mm-hmm. was a pretty nice venue in some ways. I still think mm-hmm. Y'all need to deal with the smoking issue.
And have a separate smoking area?
Yes, far away from where the people are sitting that want to actually be there and see the hear the music and see the artist. So what are some of the things that you formed a nonprofit group? How did that come about?
Well, we felt like the festival was a celebration of music, art, and community, and we wanted to have an organization around that, and it's nice not to pay taxes, so that's how that came about. And so we established that, and we use the Athena Art Project to produce the festival, and we've produced other events throughout the history. We've had art shows and CD release parties and readings and that sort of thing.
Yeah, that speed dating thing one time, too.
We've had some speed dating.
I don't know about that.
So when people say they want to take it slow, it's like, oh, I don't know.
That's just getting to know people.
Yeah.
What you do after that's your business.
Doing it. What are some of the principles and objectives of the festival? Why do you do this?
The festival was founded as a celebration because there's plenty of organizations, I think, that people can join for political reasons and social reasons and educational reasons and all of those good and worthwhile, wonderful things. And I think that throughout history, every society has had a celebration, a festival, a time when people come together and share what they have and what they can create. And generally it happens in the fall as a harvest time. And it was a way to have musicians who had moved away from Houston be able to come back and play for the hometown crowd. And it was a way for visual artists to display their work. And we really like to have sculptors out there, people who work with leather crafts or welding metal, whatever artisans, whatever they can make and create. It's a great time to share.
So it's not just listening to music, but there's vendors there that have different items, handcrafted
That's
items,
right.
and there's food.
That's right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Give me one of them turkey legs.
And maybe a funnel cake.
Yeah. Ooh, funnel cake. I love those. The event will be when this year?
It's October 21st. It's a Saturday. It's from noon to 10 p.m. at Jones Plaza downtown.
Who has been some of the well-known performers, I guess you would say? I know you've had some of the women's music pioneers even over the years.
We definitely like to have some pioneers, and actually I would like to ask J.D., who has been some of his favorite performers, if he doesn't mind.
Oh, Farron.
Farron.
And I love Melissa Ferrick.
Melissa Ferrick, always popular.
Mm-hmm. And Gretchen. Gretchen, of course.
Yeah. And this year you have one of the premier women's music figures, Deidre McCullough.
That's, yeah.
I think I put a bug in her ear about that.
Oh, really? Was that a plant?
Well,
I last saw her at the March on Washington she performed in 1993, and then shortly thereafter there was a small women's festival in Charlottesville, Virginia. And she was playing there, and she made this statement that I just thought was so good, because we had estimated that there were about 1 million people at the march, and the news reports were saying that there were about 300,000.
They always do that.
And Deidre said, well, that's because women have people of color and lesbians are invisible. And I thought that was really good. But I actually was getting a massage while she was on stage singing.
That sounds nice.
It was really nice. You want to be any massages at your festival?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So. You can recreate that experience.
Let me insert a plug. Some of you may not be familiar with her music, and I was fortunate to do a really good interview with her a couple of years ago on my show. It can be heard on my website, queermusicheritage.com, so you can hear her talk about her music and hear a lot of her songs that span her whole 30-plus year career. So that'll be a nice taste for people.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, it is. And by the way, I complimented J.D. personally on this earlier, but he helped with the music that was used for the recent production by Theater New West, Joe Watts' The Normal Heart. And it really was well done. It really enhanced the play, and the play was incredible. The
cast, yeah, I thought it was stunning.
Yes, it was. And kudos to Joe Watts and the cast of The Normal Heart. Move on from J.D.'s other many extracurricular activities, mm-hmm, as being our music guru. The festival, do you think it has changed in any significant ways over the year? Is there something that's going to happen this year maybe that is different than in years past? Charmin?
Well, we've got actually a lot of new emerging artists and some that are really not so much emerging, but they've been around a while, but people don't get to see them here in the Houston area. Eddie Kaluckett, I think people are really going to enjoy because she brings a multicultural diversity to the festival.
Mm-hmm.
She,
I saw her at the International Festival.
Right. Arden Ebersmeyer with, mm-hmm, the Loaf Group is totally in love with Erica.
Yeah, she was.
Okay, she's very attractive.
She sings in Portuguese, Spanish, French, as well as English. So, and she's just a master of the guitar. So, I think people are really going to enjoy
that. Some of you may have seen her during the Houston International Festival.
Right. Well, she, and also another added touch is she's going to be playing with Sid Casone, who many people know
with Ruthie Foster,
huh? Mm-hmm. So that's some of the new things. We're also, you know, trying to get a scholarship fund started, and that's in development. That's not going to happen overnight, but you know, because we have to, you know, look at organizations and find out, you know, where it is that we feel the money should go to. But, you know, it's
so something
that's in the works.
So you're talking about where profits, if any, were made from the festival could be used in another way to help an organization or even an individual, maybe?
Well, women in the arts.
Women in the arts, music, help somebody with school or get started somehow.
Exactly.
Maybe all they need is a piccolo, and then and there they go. Well, that's a wonderful idea. And now, it is a nonprofit organization. Have in the past, has there been money made?
We have used some money to put back into the festival to make it bigger and better. But at one point, we were able to give a $5,000 grant to Gretchen Phillips, actually, hometown girl. Done, you know, been a pioneer in music.
But every time there's a hurricane, you take it tough.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Well, I do want to mention also that one special thing this year is Patrice Pike will be having her CD release party at the festival for her new CD. And we've had her at the festival before. She's been really supportive. We really, really like her. But, of course, now she's been on a national stage.
Let's say, for those few people, you booked her before all this happened. Yeah. well, for the few people on the planet who may not know about this, explain why having Patrice there is a bigger deal than ever.
Well, she has been on a national television show, and her stock, I guess, if you will, has gone way up. And
recognition factor.
She was a contestant on Rockstar Supernova.
That is correct.
And she went pretty far before she eventually was dropped from being one of the people selected, which I think is probably a good thing that she didn't get it. But
she was selected out of apparently 25,000 applicants.
Yeah, she certainly held her own, and I was proud of her. And she's a fantastic performer, and so it will be a chance for, you know, it's like on American Idol, which I've never seen, by the way, but you can't help just by flipping channels sometimes picking up information. And some of the people that did not win the American Idol actually have gone on to do as well, if not better, than some of the winners. So.
That's right. And she's very deserving. And so we're really looking forward to welcoming her back to Houston. This will be her Houston homecoming.
Can I mention that this is Houston Women's Festival, but men are welcome?
Absolutely.
And I always felt very welcome there. I love this event.
Open to all.
Yeah.
It's women
performers, and some of their band members might be men, or men, I should say.
My brother's there, my dad's there.
Yeah. and so, you know, don't cheat yourself out because it's women's music. In fact, you have a lot to gain from the exposure to it. And during the day, it's kind of this artsy, craftsy in the music, but at night, It kind of changes the ambiance. And
it does when the sun goes down and people start cruising.
The girls come out to play.
That's correct.
Yes. So is on the lineup, is Patrice like the nighttime act,
headliner? She's the headliner.
Right.
But we have also Garrison Starr.
Right. Absolutely. She's been doing very well all across the country, bringing in a good amount of people everywhere she plays. And she's actually played in Houston here probably 3 or 4 times within the last year. So she's really building a fan base, and we're real excited to have her as well.
And is it Ginger Lee or Lay?
Lee.
Lee?
Uh-huh. Yeah. In fact, We have several, actually, performers from from Austin. Adrian and the Sickness, they've become quite popular here in Houston. We also have the Ginn Sisters, who add a little country and Americana flavor
to the
festival.
I've heard one track by them and I fell in love with it.
Yeah, they're quite good. And again, as I mentioned, Eddie Kaluckett brings a good cultural diversity, and Echo Set's a really good band out of Austin as well that has become very popular here in Houston.
So. And where is Deidre in the lineup?
She is probably going to be in mid-afternoon, you know, before...
Good, before my bedtime.
So we've got a great lineup, and I think... I think there's something there for everybody.
Well, we're actually going to have some folks back in 2 weeks to talk a little more specifically about the artist and play more of their
music. Yeah, more in-depth on the music itself.
Is there anything else that y'all want to let the people know, like how they get tickets and the details
Who, what, when, where?
Yeah. We definitely want people to visit the website. It's hwfestival.org, hwfestival.org, and you can buy tickets from the website through PayPal, and we also need volunteers.
Uh-huh.
That's right. And there's actually even some vendor slots available if anybody's, you know,
interested
has some
in
arts, crafts, you know, whatever. Go to the website, and there's information on how you... can become a vendor, and there's forms to fill out and mail in. So, you know, there are some open slots for
that. And for those that might be technologically limited, is there a phone number?
There is. You can call 713-995-5251.
Okay. Is that it? Is there anything else?
Well, we look forward to seeing you there.
Oh, I'll be there. You know I will. We're going to have to. I need to be there because we have so much. There's a resurgence of women's music. And on November 4th, the Diva House Concerts will be hosting Tret Fury. And we're still trying to lock in a venue. But there's been a lot of interest expressed. And then on November 11th, Ann Reed out of Minnesota will be here at the Houston Community College Heinen Theater. So there's lots going on, and we'll be reporting more of that and give you all the insight. I know I get a lot of response to the Feminist Online Network because I ask people, how did you find out about it? And they say through the Women's Festival site. So, and I always put information on there about the Women's Festival and with the website address and a link so that we, you know, because it's all about networking. Got a network.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Right.
So if you'd like to join the Feminist Online Network, or also known as FemNet, send an email with the word subscribe in the subject area to femnet-subscribe@yahoogroups.com, and that'll help keep you informed with all sorts of things that are going on in the community, including what's going to be on Queer Voices and the Women's Festival, and when other things are going on, and it's people that need to give kittens away,
very good,
and people that have houses for rent. But anyway, I usually can answer questions too. It's amazing how this works. It's because you have all this information, you can answer questions. So, once again, FemNet on Yahoo Groups, and thank you, Shirley Knight and Charmin Petrie, for being with us.
We're going to go out with the music of Ginger Lee, one of the performers, and you're listening to Queer Voices.
This thing in my head. with my collar in place and the needles and nurses righteousness placed upside down.
Is Queer Voices.
I'm Sherry Lund.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending September 30th, 2006. South Africa's former Deputy President Jacob Zuma, who could be the nation's next president, provoked outrage this week by calling homosexuality un-African and criticizing the pending legal recognition of same-gender unions. The country's constitution is the world's first to specifically ban discrimination based on sexual orientation, and its highest court last year ordered Parliament to enact laws to establish marriage equality for same-gender couples by December 1st. It ruled that South Africa's Marriage Act will automatically include same-gender couples if Parliament fails to act by that deadline. Zuma was quoted by the Sowetan newspaper as saying, "Same-sex marriage is a disgrace to the nation and to God," at a gathering in his native KwaZulu-Natal. Meanwhile, thousands of people, led by the African Christian Democratic Party, marched in several South African cities in mid-September to protest the government's plan to pass a civil unions bill that would give same-gender couples the same rights as married people, though it's unclear if such separate but equal legislation will satisfy the High Court. South African President Thabo Mbeki had fired Zuma for having a generally corrupt relationship with a former aide, but he remains popular and continues to lead the African National Congress, or ANC. The ANC party leader is virtually assured the country's presidency, and because a court threw out the corruption charges against him last week, Zuma appears to be a strong candidate to succeed Mbeki when he steps down in 2009. It would seem Jacob Zuma still has a lot to learn about leadership. The joint working group, representing South Africa's biggest queer advocacy organizations, said in a statement, "A true leader leads with intellect and wisdom, not popularity or favor. How can a narrow-minded person like this be expected to lead our nation?" Zuma quickly issued an apology, saying that he did not intend to have my statements interpreted as a condemnation of gays and lesbians, and that he respected the sterling contribution of many gay and lesbian compatriots in the struggle that brought about our freedom.
In a significant victory for U.S. marriage equality advocates, a Superior Court judge ruled this week that a lesbian couple from Rhode Island can legally marry in Massachusetts under the Supreme Judicial Court's 2003 ruling that legalized gay and lesbian weddings in that state. Wendy Becker and Mary Norton of Providence, Rhode Island, challenged a 1913 Massachusetts law that forbids out-of-state residents from marrying there if the marriage would not be legally recognized in their home state. The couple argued that it didn't apply to them because Rhode Island doesn't specifically ban same-gender marriage. In his 9-page ruling, Judge Thomas Connolly agreed, writing that no evidence was introduced before this court of a constitutional amendment, statute, or controlling appellate decision from Rhode Island that explicitly deems void or otherwise expressly forbids same-sex marriage. 8 couples from 6 nearby states originally challenged the law. In March, the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court upheld it, but said the laws on legal same-gender unions were unclear in New York and Rhode Island, and reserved judgment on that part of the case. In July, New York's highest court ruled that its state law limits marriage to one man and one woman. Same-gender couples from Rhode Island, at least for now, are the only ones from out of state who can marry in Massachusetts. State Attorney General Thomas Riley, who had defended the 1913 law in court, said officials in Rhode Island could challenge Connolly's decision, but that his office would not appeal. Becker and Norton, a couple for 19 years and the parents of two children, said in a statement that, after a very long engagement, we are thrilled to be able to marry and provide our family with the legal protection and social recognition we deserve. Our desire to marry has always been with our children in mind. We want them to feel their family is as worthy as any other.
The Georgia Court of Appeals this week returned to lesbian mother Victoria Moses primary custody of her 12-year-old daughter, ruling that having a live-in same-gender partner had no adverse effect on the child. Custody had been awarded by a trial court judge to the girl's father, Kelvin King, citing Moses' living arrangements as being outside the presence of marriage, even though gay and lesbian couples can't legally marry in the state. In reversing the lower court, Georgia Court of Appeals Judge Ann Elizabeth Barnes wrote that the evidence suggests that the child was doing well in school, loved the mother's partner, and was happy and well-balanced. Jack Centerfit, senior staff attorney in Lambda Legal's Atlanta office, represented Moses. He praised the court's ruling, saying, "This is really great news for our client and gay and lesbian parents in Georgia. It means custody arrangements can't be challenged just because a parent is gay or lesbian."
A gay male couple in Spain's Air Force was married in a mid-September ceremony in the city of Seville. Privates Alberto Linero Marquena and Alberto Sanchez Fernandez tied the knot at City Hall in uniform before friends and family. Mayor Alfredo Sanchez Montserin officiated, saying, "This is not just your wedding. You symbolize millions of people who are not here and suffer from homophobia." Spain is one of five countries where same-gender couples have access to traditional marriage.
In other news, the General Assembly of New Zealand's Presbyterian Church voted this week to reaffirm its ban on gays and lesbians from holding leadership roles within the church. In revisiting a 2004 vote, the church's top legislative body, by a 65% margin, approved a statement that the church may not accept for training, license, ordain, or induct anyone involved in a sexual relationship outside of faithful marriage between a man and a woman. The rule doesn't apply to any church member ordained as a minister prior to 2004 and can't be used to remove anyone from such a position. According to 2006 national census figures, 11% of New Zealand's approximately 4 million people identify as Presbyterian, making the church the third largest in the country. Openly lesbian minister Margaret Maiman warned that the ban may be broken by more progressive parishes who will flout the law and choose leaders for their commitment to the gospel rather than for their sexual orientation.
And a United Nations-sponsored workshop in Kariba this week was expected to lay the groundwork for the creation of a human rights commission in Zimbabwe. But gay and lesbian concerns won't be part of that process. GALS, the Gay and Lesbian Association of Zimbabwe, was banned from participating in the workshop by the government of vociferously homophobic President Robert Mugabe, who's described lesbians and gays as worse than dogs and pigs, and threatened pro-queer clergy with prison sentences. GAL spokesperson Fambe Ndirande complained that we must be allowed to enjoy freedom of association as any other individuals do, and called the exclusion of GALs an abrogation of our rights.
Meanwhile, the Filipino gay organization Ang Ladlad has registered a candidate in Manila who'll run for Congress in 2007. Chairperson Danton Ramoto told local media that the group wants to reclaim the rights we have lost from centuries of homophobia and discrimination. Ang Ladlad means coming out. The Manila Bulletin said it comes from the word Magladlad, which means to unfurl the cape that used to cover one's body as a shield.
And finally, former New Jersey Governor James McGreevy's The Confession has jumped onto the bestseller list. It comes on the heels of his whirlwind promotional appearances on U.S. TV talk shows this week. The book chronicles McGreevy's coming out as a gay American while resigning from office amidst contentious he said accounts of the then governor's relationship with a male staff member. The confession has been met with both praise and ridicule. Gay journalist Andy Hum wrote that McGreevy wasted his life living a lie Now he wants us to waste our time reading more of them. Meanwhile, openly lesbian and gay candidates have enjoyed notable victories in U.S. state elections so far this year, including historic wins in such formerly unlikely places as Alabama, Arkansas, and Oklahoma. But a conservative six-term Republican U.S. congressman from Florida, who's long been rumored to be a closeted gay man, has abruptly resigned from office. There are certain things we shouldn't discuss in public, 52-year-old and unmarried Mark Foley once told a press conference when asked about his sexual orientation. Some people may think that's old-fashioned, but I firmly believe it's a good rule to live by. Not so good were the lascivious emails and instant messages reported this week as having been sent by Foley to some teenage male pages. Pages are usually high school students who attend classes under congressional supervision and work as messengers for the lawmakers. In an instant message exchange with one of those young male pages, Foley wrote, "Do I make you horny?" and asked the 16-year-old for a photo and to strip down and get naked. Copies of even more salacious emails and instant messages surfaced in the short time between the initial reports and the congressman's resignation. "I am deeply sorry and I apologize for letting down my family and the people of Florida I have had the privilege to represent," Foley said in a statement issued by his office with no other words of explanation. His departure has sent Republicans scrambling for a replacement candidate 6 weeks before midterm elections in which Foley was expected to easily win another term. Sparked by the poor public approval ratings of President George W. Bush, Democrats are making a strong bid across the country to gain control of Congress. And while there's no connection between sexual predators and sexual orientation, in fact, numerous studies show that such perpetrators are overwhelmingly heterosexual men, it's perhaps sadly ironic that Foley was chairperson of the Congressional Missing and Exploited Children's Caucus.
That's News Wrap for the week ending September 30th, 2006, written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm John Beaupré.
And I'm Sherry Lund.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening again. We're on the phone with us. We've got Dr. Susan Lawrence, author of Creating a Healing Society. Dr. Lawrence is a native of Brooklyn, New York, who entered Barnard University, Barnard College at age 14 to escape a troubled family. Interesting.
That's a good way to do it.
Well, hey, I wish I could have escaped my troubled family. She was inspired to... She was inspired and mentored by Christian Barnard, the South African surgeon who performed the world's first human heart transplant, and she entered Baylor College of Medicine at 18. Well, that's fantastic. Susan, are you there with us?
Yes, I am, and it's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, thank you. Now, I understand you're here in Texas, are you?
I am. I just got into Beaumont. I'm going to be speaking with my colleague, Dave Mayshore, at the 19th Annual AIDS Update put on by Triangle AIDS Network.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
You're in my hometown, by the way.
Oh, great.
Yes, I escaped there as soon as I could. They're not real fond of trans people there.
Oh, well, you know, I haven't been here before, but it does seem kind of a little bit of a, I don't want to say depressing place, but...
throwback in time.
Yeah, exactly.
But by golly, there's some wonderful people that have come
from Beaumont. Well, I did. yes. Well, I have two sisters living there, and I go in, when I do visit them, it's like I'm going back in time.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Well, what prompted you to write this book?
You know, my husband, Sonny, died of AIDS in 1993, and he was a really extraordinary man, a very deep and spiritual man, and who had come from a very difficult family situation and had been an IV drug user much of his life. And the year before he died, he said to me, "You know, Susan," he said, "I'm not going to be dying of AIDS. I'm going to be dying of the delayed effects of child abuse." And that one statement was so profound to me because it really shifted how I viewed, at first, just the AIDS epidemic. You know, what was really the root cause and driving force of the AIDS epidemic, which was, you know, unhealed human trauma, you know, causing us to act out in ways that were self-destructive.
Well, that was very profound when I read that. I said, whoa, that sort of took me back, too, to say, well, maybe there's more that I need to look at a little closer.
Mm-hmm. Because you yourself, Dr. Lawrence, had a troubled childhood.
Yes, exactly.
That had an effect. And so how did you come to your own recovery?
Well, you know, for many years, even though on the surface, you know, and like so many of these things, on the surface, things may look good. You know, it may look good on the surface that I went to college so young and went to medical school so young and devoted myself to my education. But in reality, it was a way of running away from pain that I had no assistance in dealing with and could not cope with. And so for many years, I lived in a lot of pain. I was very depressed and unhappy and was searching for something that would enable me to get to the bottom of what was going on in my life. And finally, after many years and many attempts, I found a therapist who really, really helped me. It enabled me to understand that child abuse sometimes can be very subtle, but can have devastating effects on our lives. And I began a process of recovery, you know, that I continue, you know, to this day.
I think we all have to recover from those traumas our whole lives.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I think it's a lifelong process. I think it's one that, you know, really never stops. And my life is to a point where I'm, for the most part, you know, I have a lot of peace and I have, you know, some clarity on what's going on. But still, periodically, things come up that require my attention and I have to look way back into what was, you know, going on in my childhood and how that continues to impact me today. And I feel that this process is something that most everybody, or maybe everybody, has going on in their lives, but we just are not aware that things that happened to us so long ago can continue to drive our lives. And then when you think about millions and millions and millions of people in that situation, acting out their pain unconsciously through behavior, then I came to understand that, you know, this is really the root cause of what's driving society's problems, such as, you know, AIDS, hepatitis C, violence, crime, incarceration, homelessness, you know, all the major problems that we struggle with.
Yeah, it's like we're all wounded as individuals, so as a whole, we're also going to be wounded.
Yes.
And to recover from that, and different people find different paths to recovery, and some people never recover, unfortunately.
That's right.
And so how did you come to identify, you said your husband was a source with that, giving you the thought, the idea, and the message that you took as being a profound reality, but how did you come to identifying this on a larger scale and to, because I take it the purpose of the book is to help introduce others to this way of healing.
Yes, absolutely. Well, not long after he died, I started doing HIV prevention work in a youth probation camps working with incarcerated teens. And that really helped me to see the rest of the story, because the teens came from the same kind of abusive backgrounds as did my husband, but their manifestation wasn't AIDS. Their manifestation was that they were gang members, they were involved in violence and crime and drugs. And cumulatively, you know, when you think of the large numbers of kids involved in this, I came to see that AIDS isn't the only outcome of unhealed trauma. You know, gangs, drugs, violence, you know, all these are all different outcomes that affect our society in different ways that have the same root cause.
Right. And you're listening to KPFT Houston. I'm Deborah Bell along with Jennifer Renee, and we're talking to Dr. Susan Lawrence, who is in Beaumont to address the Triangle AIDS Network, and she is the author of the book, Creating a Healing Society.
Susan, what is the most prevalent form of trauma you've witnessed in your work?
You know, I would have to say that it's subtle forms of trauma that most of us as adults have difficulty identifying. Things like just not being accepted for exactly who we are.
You know, I understand that one.
Totally. You know, I understand that too, totally.
And I can understand that, and I venture to guess that almost all of the listening audience can in one way or another. And I know people who's, you know, like 50 years old, and they're still impacted by the family dynamics that they grew up with. Even when there wasn't outright abuse towards them, they either witnessed abuse or there was some dysfunction taking place in the family that still has an impact to this very day.
Yes, absolutely.
So what are some of the ways to address that?
Well, I think there are many ways. You know, for me, therapy was very helpful. For others, things like meditation can be extremely helpful. Using art, using martial arts, using journaling and writing, having, you know, making a real concerted effort to find healthy relationships, close relationships with healthy people who can be mentors to us and help us to look at what's really going on with our lives. I think there are many ways, but what's really important about any of them is that we have to adopt them as something really critical to our lives. It can't just be a hobby. It has to be something that we set as a very high priority. Because I know for me, I had to make my doing my inner work, doing my recovery work, as my number one priority. It was that important, and it takes that kind of focus and attention to really get the desired results.
Are we talking about something similar to the only thing that I'm really familiar with, and that's a 12-step program?
I think that can be really helpful for people as well. I know some people in 12-step programs, maybe they like, for example, if they're struggling with drug addiction, you know, they may think that it's important. What's most important is to be clean and sober. And it's not that important to look at the underlying causes why one got involved in drugs in the first place. I really think that to have complete healing, it's important to look at the root causes and not just at, you know, staying clean and sober and not using. You know, well, so that's kind of an example of that.
Right. Well, I've got over 18 years of recovery.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank
that's
you.
Wonderful.
Thank you. And that's one of the things that, you know, if you really want recovery, you have to look at all the other stuff. It can't just be one item because we have so many other things. Once I cleaned up from drugs and alcohol, I suddenly found out I had food addictions and incest issues, and it was a myriad and basket of trauma I brought from my family.
It's like that onion. You have to peel away the layers.
Yes.
Yeah.
And of course, we get to know ourselves better as adults if we're lucky, and we can look back at those childhood traumas or the things that impacted us. But how do we go beyond them and not let those things define our lives? Because apparently what has happened in society is that there's all these wounded people. There are all these wounded people walking around who, if they're fortunate, they're working some kind of recovery or they're in recovery, but how do we expect our society to function? In what ways are we going to create that healing society?
Well, I really think it happens one person at a time. And I think when we get a critical mass of people, of consciousness, so to speak, of people who are committed to looking under the surface and not just trying to cover up their traumas and the effects of their traumas with Band-Aids or things like you know, socially acceptable ways of dealing with things like shopping or materialism or food or whatever it is. When we have a critical mass of people who can serve as role models in society, that it is possible to look at our past, it is possible to devote ourselves to recovery, and that's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's not something to be covered up. Then I think the peer pressure, so to speak, in society will shift so that this will become something that is just part of a normal part of human life.
Exactly.
You know, we've all been traumatized in some way, We all need to heal. It's just part of being human. And I really, you know, I wrote the book in part to introduce that concept to people and talk about it and hopefully gather more like-minded people.
I think you're, I totally agree with you because I could never break through and open up until I was around a lot of people who had were of a like mind, and there was that sense of safety.
Mm-hmm.
To be yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And through that recovery, I was able to eventually become who I am today. There was, in the foreword, there was a question, and I loved it, and I, if I don't mind me, it says, where do we start in order to make a safer, more just, and peaceful world? Where do we start?
I believe we start within ourselves, each one of us taking the responsibility to look at our lives, to look at the issues that are driving any antisocial or self-destructive behavior we may be engaging in, and to heal from that. And when we heal from that, we can be present with others and help others heal from that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where we start, with ourselves.
Well, always the first step is admitting that you have a problem or an issue or something that has to, something has to change in order to make your life whole.
I thought the what I saw in here was the eye-opening part of the book where you look beyond just the surface to see what's back there, sort of don't look at the man behind the curtain type thing, because those are the issues that we have to look at. There's something else. Sonny made that statement that you started off with, I just said, wow.
Yeah, I think Sonny was really an extraordinary person and had an ability to look at things in a very different way, and he really helped me to be able to do that as well.
How long ago was his passing?
In 1993.
Mm-hmm.
He died July 25th, 1993.
Mm-hmm. And this, have you developed a technique or a workshop or something that facilitates people moving towards recovery, or do you have recommendations of where people can go when they look for help? We have some community organizations here in Houston that especially that are of service to the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender community, as well as other organizations helping mainstream. But is there a movement in place to...
Well, the program that we do, that I do with my colleague Dave, and as part of the Catalyst Foundation, the nonprofit organization that I founded with Sonny back in 1992, it's a program that is more of a social change, social awareness program, rather than something that helps individuals to do their own healing. Although we have, at the end of my book, there's going to be a resource guide that has a lot of different information, resources that people can contact for different forms of healing that they may be inclined to participate in.
Uh-huh.
You know, therapeutic resources, meditation resources, websites from organizations that offer educational materials and so on. But our Creating a Healing Society program is more of a social change program, in that we travel across the country and speak to a wide variety of audiences about these concepts, that unhealed trauma is the root cause and driving force of society's problems.
Okay.
Is there a website or a contact information that our listeners might be able to contact and get further information?
Yes, absolutely. We have a website. It's creatingahealingsociety.org. And in fact, it has information about our educational programs and our workshops, and also my book can be ordered through the website. It won't be in bookstores until, I think, November. But it can be pre-ordered on the website right now.
And again, the book is Creating a Healing Society, The Impact of Human Emotional Pain and Trauma on Society in the World, by Dr. Susan Lawrence, who has a little bit of a Houston connection, because she did go to Baylor.
Yes.
And we thank you for being with us this evening on Queer Voices.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Come on, girl. Excuse me.
Quite a bit of Girl on Girl Love. The artist's name is Ochi, O-C-H-I. The song is Tell Me Your Name, and this is one of the most openly lesbian CDs I've heard in quite a while, and with many tracks that we can't quite play yet on the radio. I do want to mention something totally unrelated. This is Hispanic Heritage Month and Gay History Month, and starting them both off tomorrow night is a special performance of a play called, a one-man show called Tortilla Heaven. It stars and was written by Jade Esteban Estrada, one of my artist friends, who's also done some of the Icons shows in the past. It's a benefit for GCAM, the Gulf Coast Archives and Museum. For information on that, visit their site, www.gcam.org.
This is Queer Voices.
This is Deborah Bell, and I kind of got all excited there when they were talking about girl-on-girl action and stuff. I mean, good gosh, what kind of show is this? Oh, yeah, it's a queer show. And Ellie and I are in the studio with the lovely folks from the Alley Theater because it's the time to start up the next season of Act Out at the Alley. And introduce yourselves as
Adriana Perez
and Michael Ferris.
And Adriana is in the publicity department.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. And most of you will remember that Philip Mayer was with us last year, and we would always talk about what play was coming up as part of the Act Out series. And what exactly is Act Out?
Well, it's a series that we have for gay and lesbian theater fans, and it's an opportunity to get together before a play and to have fabulous appetizers and drinks and listen to music and learn a little bit about the show and then see the play.
Mm-hmm. And how many years have you been doing Act Out?
I believe this is the third season,
uh-huh.
And it's been very successful, so we're going to keep doing it.
Yeah, well, I've had the pleasure of attending a number of the plays. There was one that I wanted to see really badly, and I had to be out of town that night. But for one thing, there's the reception.
Right.
Which is, you get food, there's drink, and there's lovely people. Sometimes members of the cast are present. Mm-hmm. I just loved it when Culture Clash was there, and we got to talk with those guys. And there's great music. And then you also get to meet other people in the community who like live theater. And JD and I have this thing, because we'll get some notice of a play and he'll say, well, where's the queer angle? And I tell him, well, all theater is gay, you know, please. But what you show is the whatever the current play that is showing, and that's whatever is the first, no, the second Thursday of the
Right. It's the first Thursday of the run of the show.
Okay.
The show will start on a Friday, and then it's that Thursday.
The following.
Right. The following Thursday.
Right.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. So play that's going to open the series this year is Much Ado About Nothing by that little scribe known as William Shakespeare.
Who's that?
And Michael is with the costume shop and
yes,
and rentals manager, which I've got to ask you exactly what that means. And Shakespeare, they have different ways of doing Shakespeare. One of them is to do it in modern clothes and just use even change the language sometime to modernize it. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's to do it in the style that it would have been done if it was being done during Shakespeare's lifetime, which would have been what would have been considered modern dress. And then sometimes the plays are done in costume pertinent to the time and place that the play is about.
Correct.
Which one is this?
Michael,
this one is very different. This one is not set in the time that would be modern times for the Shakespeare people. It's kind of very eclectic. It's very bold. It's very different. Even the shapes of the costumes themselves, the silhouettes, as they call them, are a little bit exaggerated. It's actually, a lot of the costumes take little aspects from all different periods of clothing, but then it's got a very modern twist to it.
So whose vision is this?
This vision is Fabio Tobellini, who is the costume designer, and
his name sounds familiar. What else has he done?
He's done several things in Houston. Recently, he did a production of Romeo and Juliet for the
It was the Dominique Walsh Dance Theater,
mm. Which was amazing. It was beautiful.
Is this work significantly different? I mean, he is the costume designer, right?
Yes.
And Describe one of the costumes.
Where it comes from, it basically starts with the idea that the director is going to have and what his concept is. And then he meets with all the different aspects of the production department, the costumes, the props, sets, the whole nine yards. And they come up with this world that these people are going to live in. And that's kind of what Fabio has done with this. I think some of the things that are very interesting about Fabio's designs are that it's very sensual, usually. Mm-hmm. And he's pushing it a little more this time as well. So he's going into the sensual.
He makes everyone look so beautiful.
He makes everyone look wonderful.
Oh, good. That might get a few more of our listeners there. Now, one of the nice things about the ACT OUT program is that you always have a beneficiary.
That is
correct. That... money from that night's proceeds go to help a community organization. Mm-hmm. And which one is it this time?
This time for Much Ado, we're going to be benefiting Casa de Esperanza, which is it's an organization that allows for a safe place for children in crisis due to abuse, neglect, or the effects of HIV. So people can bring in... people can bring in diapers or formula or anything for kids.
Or cash.
Right, or cash. And we'll actually have staff from Casa de Esperanza there, and they can, if you want to learn more about their organization, they're going to be on hand to talk to you a little bit more about
it. It's a wonderful group. They do really great work. One of those community organizations that came about for needs which we wish did not exist. So the Much Ado About Nothing has a rather large cast. what does it take to do you have a bunch of elves sitting back there working 24/7?
Tons of elves. Generally we keep a staff of about 11 to 12 people in the costume shop, and that includes the people who make the wigs and deal with the costumes, people who sew, and then we have extra people who do just the wardrobe, which is running the show. Once the show is open, they take care of the maintaining the clothes backstage. At this point, we have at least doubled that, if not more. I haven't stopped to count. We have a new tailor in this season that's going to be with us for the entire season. We have enough shows that it's going to constitute that. And what we call teams. We have three teams where usually we just have one per show. we have jobbed some things out to different parts of the country to... have some of the basics built. Like, you know, we had 12 capes, so those all went out and came back to us.
The cast is very, very large. We have our entire acting company on stage, as well as an ensemble company as well. So it's a very huge...
I was going to say, they're not all that big.
So we have our 12 resident company actors. And
so the usual suspects.
All of the usual suspects together.
Plus
A few more.
So who are some of the highlights for this production, and would you say leads?
Well, our two playing, the headstrong Benedict and sassy Beatrice is Jeffrey Bean, who is a normal...
The marvelous Jeffrey
right,
Bean.
Right, marvelous Jeffrey Bean. And Elizabeth Heflin, uh-huh. And she is fantastic. They are playing the couple, they hate each other and very, very
love
witty. Yeah, love and love-hate relationship. So they're playing the two leads. And then we also have Elizabeth Bunch, who is playing the young hero, and she was seen in a couple of shows last season.
Right.
And then we have someone new. His name is Will Fowler, who is an actor from New York, and so he'll be... He's one of the new faces that we'll see on stage.
One of the joys of going to the alley is noticing the repertory company players who have sometimes such different roles from one play to another, and consciously you're thinking, well, that's Jeffrey or that's Paul Hope or but they're they do their character and they tell the story, and it's always there's I always say about the alley that there's not a bad seat in the house, for one thing.
That's true.
What are some of the underlying themes of this production that might affect the way that you create the costumes?
Oh my goodness, that's a very good question. I need help with this
one. I mean, I think one of the themes is that, well, the town that the play is set in is Messina, and our director, the director of the show, Scott Schwartz, he envisioned this town being situated on top of a mountain, and so the only way that people can, the peasants or whoever can come up to the town is by way of hot air balloon. And so,
Cool.
That's the part I forgot.
So,
I was wondering why those hot air balloons were on the ad.
I think a lot of people are wondering. And so when you go,
I've always wanted to go up in one.
Well, you'll definitely see them on stage, at the alley. So I think a big part of it was that, this is a huge, you know, the city on top of a mountain overlooking, the valley, the country, and these people are very wealthy, and they live in this grandiose town, and I don't really know if that's a theme, but it's definitely something that is different from other productions.
Something
on My
interesting
to-do.
With the costumes, too, is that particularly with the women's costumes, when you're looking at them, the silhouette is so intense, let's say, that you can't tell whether you're looking at their undergarments or their outer garments, or whether it's both, and it changes in some
way. My. Yeah, that is getting risque. No wonder they're calling it Much Ado About Nothing. So, Michael, how long have you been with the Alley? For a while?
For a little while. This is the beginning of my 16th season.
Oh, my.
So I started as a very young child.
You were only two and a half at the time.
Three, I believe, yes. Yeah. And I've worked myself up to...
You're almost legal. So.
And what have been some of your favorite productions over the years?
Oh my goodness! Anything with James Black. Elizabeth Heflin is amazing. The entire Resonant Company. I think we're very blessed with just a very talented Resonant Company and extremely nice people. The shows that always come to mind are the Scottish play. Was just amazing that there were some magical moments in that. I think the first show I saw James Black in was T-Bone and Weasel, where I got to help dress him as a woman, which was interesting, very different.
There's so many to choose from.
So many to choose from, yes.
Yeah, well, this is the 60th anniversary. That's 60.
Yes.
That's older than even
we're
me.
We're very, very old.
Of the Alley. And what will be some of the other act-out events for this season?
Ooh, we've got a really good lineup this year. Apart from Much Ado, the next act-out event will be for... actually, won't be until next year, which will be in January, I believe, and that is for...
Near time for my birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. for A Moon for the Misbegotten.
How appropriate.
and then after that, we'll have this really great, fantastic play called Hitchcock Blonde about Alfred Hitchcock and his... fascinations with blondes, so that will be a great production to attend, and then after that we'll have our world premiere production of Larry McMurtry's Terms of Endearment, and that's starring Linda Gray. Remember her from
Sue Ellen from Dallas.
Exactly. So she will be playing the role of Aurora, which most Houstonians know that story.
Houston-based play.
Exactly.
And then one that's, I'm sure, going to keep you quite busy,
yes,
Michael.
Very busy, yes.
Robert Louis Stevenson's Great Adventure, Treasure Island.
Really, my heart.
Yes. We'll get to be pirates again.
Exactly.
Yes. Will Johnny Depp be one? Please. Orlando Bloom? No? Okay.
Maybe.
Knightley,
we'll see.
Please.
But that would be, I mean, it's an amazing season, and the fact that Allie does this and does include the gay, lesbian, transgender, and bisexual community by having this special event, and I can't tell you how much fun they are.
It's really fun. It's a great event.
And it's a great evening, and you don't have to worry about going out to dinner, because believe me, there's plenty of food.
Lots of food.
And quite yummy, and lovely people that really, I think everyone enjoys it.
It's a fun event, and we always get really great response after it.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to give away two pairs of tickets for the act for just this show.
Yeah, let's do just for the act out on the 12th.
Okay, so if you would be interested in going to see Much Ado About Nothing at the Alley Theater on Thursday, October 12th, and you can answer this question, who is the beneficiary for the act out event on Thursday, October 12th? Please call 713-526-5738, and we'll take your names and put you on will call to get those tickets. Call in and tell us who is the beneficiary organization for the Alley's Act Out event, the Much Ado About Nothing, 713-526-5738. Now, I guess the thing I didn't ask you about was how do people become, get the series? Because if they want to be part of the Act Out series, they want to see each play.
Right.
There's a package deal.
You
so
can do,
they call.
Right. You can call the box office, and that's 713-228-8421. And you can actually buy it as a subscription, or you can just buy them, you can just purchase them as a single ticket. So you can do it either way, and then you can call the box office, like I said, or you can visit our website www.alleytheater.org to get more information. But if you want to purchase tickets, you can get a discount, and there's a promotional code. It's just called Act Out, and you'll get a discount off your tickets.
Okay, and once again, the website for the Alley is
www.alleytheater.org, and theater is spelled with an R-E at the end.
That's theater.
Theater.
Darling.
Exactly.
Well, Adriana and Michael, thank you so much for being with us this evening on Queer Voices. I'm Deborah Bell.
Thank you for having
thank
us.
You.
You'll soon find out what everyone will be talking about on October 11th. But first, we kick off LGBT History Month with an enlightening new series.
Harvey Milk, Gay Hero, coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Harvey Milk was born in New York in 1930. After college graduation and a short stint in the Navy, he moved to San Francisco and opened his own camera shop. As an outspoken advocate for his community, he longed for deeper involvement through political office. In 1977, he was elected to San Francisco's City Council, making him one of the first openly gay politicians in the country. As a gay man working for many progressive causes, he knew he could be a target. In 1978, he was assassinated by former City Councilman Dan White. But by then, his place in history had been cemented. Harvey had consistently stressed the importance of defeating homophobia by coming out. He said, quote, "Every gay person must come out. Once they realize we are indeed their children, and we are indeed everywhere, every myth, every lie, every innuendo will be destroyed once and for all." The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRAR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, Dustin Richardson.
Just one tiny note of correction. Both Harvey Milk and his assassin, Dan White, served on the City and County of San Francisco Board of Supervisors.
It's all right. You may all come out.
The 18th annual National Coming Out Day is celebrated across the U.S. on October 11th. Sponsored by the Human Rights Campaign and endorsed by virtually every queer advocacy group, events on that day encourage gay, lesbian, bi, and trans people to talk about it with family, friends, and co-workers. A personal approach proven to be the most effective educational tool there is. This Way Out observes National Coming Out Day with what we hope is a sparkling collage of music, humor, and some words of wisdom.
My sweet cherry, how long will you run? No hiding place over there, over there. Nobody knows you.
I'd say I realized that I was a lesbian when I was about 15. It was real hard for me then because I didn't know anyone else that was a lesbian besides myself.
I believe that life was exactly the way the minister said it was in the pulpit.
And when I had gay feelings, I used to just cry on my knees and pray to God that I wouldn't be gay.
I was about 2 months from my 26th birthday. I had been told by other people that I was a latent homosexual, but I didn't feel that it was true.
But if everybody said,
but if everybody said,
but if everybody said,
don't act like that,
don't show us that,
don't smile like that,
don't run like that,
don't throw like that,
don't dress like that,
don't walk like that,
don't talk like that,
don't laugh like that,
don't be like that,
don't be like that,
don't be like that,
don't be like that.
How come I'm still like that? Excuse me. Can I ask you a personal question?
Excuse me, but could I ask you a personal question?
Are you gay or what? It just makes me a little uncomfortable.
I really don't want to hear it.
I'd really rather not talk about it right
now. Hey, what you do is your own business.
Just don't talk about
it. Just don't talk about
it. Just don't talk about it.
For God's sakes, don't talk about it.
Just don't talk about it.
This is your captain speaking. We've reached our cruising altitude, so sit back and relax for the rest of the flight. We expect a smooth ride, and by the way, I'm gay.
Maybe talking about gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender equality over a loudspeaker isn't the best approach. But what about talking to the passenger next to you? Wherever you are, talk about it. Every word is a step, and the Human Rights Campaign can help. Visit hrc.org.
Everybody is frightened about making the disclosure to somebody who's important to them in their life, whether it's a parent or whether it's an employer, for instance.
Dr. Don Clark, author of Loving Someone Gay and Living Gay.
Try to sort out what are the worst things that could really happen, because sometimes the fantasies are so catastrophic that they're way out of line with reality.
My mother or my father will have a cardiac arrest and die right in front of me.
Yeah, traditionally, father has a cardiac arrest, mother jumps out of the window, and the boss fires you. I mean, everybody knows that's going to happen. So try to figure out from what you know about mother, father, or the employer what their reactions are likely to be. What's the worst thing that can happen to you?
What about the factor of being totally comfortable with yourself as a gay person before you make the disclosure to those people close to you? Isn't that important?
That's very important, yes. If you're making an announcement to somebody who cares about you, you're making a disclosure of your gay identity, and you're talking about it as if having just discovered that you've got cancer, please don't expect the straight person to celebrate with you if they care about you at all. You've got to come to terms with it yourself in a way that's not just accepting this malaise that you have, but you have to first get to the point where you appreciate what a really good thing that is in your life, what the advantages of it are, the possible richness that can bring to you. Once you have that firmly in your heart, soul, and mind, then is the time to announce it to other people who care about you. Secondly, figure out whether this is a person that you really do need to tell. I mean, there's no more burden on us than there is on a heterosexual person. You don't have to tell everybody in the world that you're gay. It's not a matter of concern for some people. A friend of mine said he was so weary of making the disclosure that he thought he'd just put an ad in the newspaper and leave town for a month and let everybody know. But try to sort out whether it's costing you some kind of emotional energy to not tell that person. If it's something on your mind a lot, you're thinking about it a lot, it's causing you to lose sleep, you don't need that kind of loss of energy, so it's probably better to confront the issue with that person. They'll ask all the usual naive questions. Did you go to a doctor and try to get it fixed? Why do you have to be that way? What do you want to have so much grief in your life for? Why don't you try to get over it, etc.? And there are answers to all those questions, a lot of it having to do with that's who I am. You know, if I were left-handed, would you want to send me to a doctor to make me right-handed? Which we did once upon a time.
Yeah.
It's not being gay that's disadvantageous. It's the society that persecutes gay people that makes it difficult to be gay.
Finally, I resolved it within myself, and then it made it much easier for my family and friends to accept me after I had accepted myself.
Everyone, when your spirit's got you on the road.
diverse. I'm not a straight woman, although I play one on TV. But acting belongs in television or in the movies, not in real life. I decided to come out as a lesbian. And this year on National Coming Out Day, you come out. Stop acting. Make the step that's right for you.
We were out in the country, spreading our wings wild and free. Learning about life from Mother Nature, doing what comes naturally.
Howdy, I'm Doug Stevens.
And we're the Out Band,
the official gay and lesbian ambassadors of country music.
And you're listening to
This Way Out, the international
lesbian
and gay magazine.
Hello, my friends. I'm Mother Nature. Isn't it a lovely day today? I'd just like to take a moment to talk to all of my gay children out there. You straights, be patient for a moment. This is only for my lovely gay children to hear. Now listen. Do you hear my sweet birds singing? Isn't it beautiful? Now, sometimes my birds sing because they're hungry, sometimes because they're scared. But it's a scientific fact that most often they sing simply because they're happy. Now, isn't that nice? And so it is with my lovely human beings. Sometimes you have sex to make babies, sometimes to make friends, but most often simply because it makes you happy. And I want to tell all my lovely lesbians and gay men out there that you're not only Mother Nature's children, but among my favorites, because you know how to make yourselves happy. That's all Mother wanted to say. Have a nice day now, and buckle your galoshes.
Wait a minute! Just wait a minute! I'd like to say one last thing. Hold on just a second. This is Lula talking. In case any of you folks out there thought this little show here was in bad taste. Well, let me just remind you what my hairdresser, Grover, used to say. He used to say, better blatant than latent.
Let's flaunt it, let's flaunt it, let's celebrate our love. I want to proliferate our love.
I'm an avowed homosexual and you're a practicing one. Long as we're gonna go to hell, we might as well have some fun. We'll stir up some trouble just by holding hands. Stop traffic, start rumors relating man to man.
Let's flaunt it, let's flaunt it, let's celebrate our love. I want to proliferate our love.
I'm a self-confessed lesbian and you're an admitted one. Long as we're gonna burn in hell, we might as well have some fun. We'll upset the neighbors, especially the men, 'cause woman to woman is threatening to them.
Sodomy!
Sodomy!
Fellatio!
Fellatio!
Cunnilingus! Degenerate, and you're an irreverent one. Long as we're on the road to hell, we might as well have some fun. And just like the army, we'll increase our troops. Get tips on recruitment from fundamentalist groups.
Let's flaunt it, let's flaunt it, let's celebrate our love. I want to proliferate our love. I want to proliferate our love. Proliferate our love. Proliferate our love.
For the straight folks who don't mind gays but wish they weren't so blatant.
Lesbian feminist poet and activist Pat Parker.
You know, some people got a lot of nerve. Sometimes I don't believe the things I see and hear. Have you met the woman who's shocked by two women kissing and in the same breath tells you that she's pregnant? But gays shouldn't be blatant. Or this straight couple sits next to you in a movie and you can't hear the dialogue because of the sound effects. But gays shouldn't be blatant. And the woman in your office spends your whole lunch hour talking about her new bikini drawers and how much her husband likes them. But gays shouldn't be blatant. or the hip chick in your class rattling a mile a minute while you're trying to get stoned in a john about the camping trip she took with her musician boyfriend. But gays shouldn't be blatant. You go in a public bathroom, and all over the walls, there's John loves Mary, Janice digs Richard, Pepe loves Dolores, etc. But gays shouldn't be blatant. Or you go to an amusement park, and there's a tunnel of love, and pictures of strays painted on the front, and grinning couples coming in and out. But gays shouldn't be blatant. Fact is, blatant heterosexuals are all over the place. Supermarkets, movies, at work, in church, in books, on television, every day and night, every place, even in gay bars. And they want gay men and women to go hide in the closets. So to you straight folks, I say, sure, I'll go, if you go too, but I'm polite, so after you. Thank you.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. This week, Sherry Lund, John Beaupre, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, and Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with Dustin Richardson contributed program material. You heard performances by Philip Coquette, Michael Katz, David Gaines, Prince Panisi, Dusty Street, and Lily Tomlin in our National Coming Out Day special feature with music by Mary Watkins, Styx, and Romanofsky and Phillips. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out anytime, exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also click on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from you, our listeners, and we thank you. Please log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some special CD thank you gifts. For associate producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WXOJ Northampton, Massachusetts, to ECR Eden, New South Wales, KMUE and KMUD, Eureka and Garberville, California, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Come out for equality and stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
This is JD and the group's Sister Funk, a lesbian band, has a brand new CD called Gossip, and here's the opening track called On the Dance Floor.
Like a hurricane, like a locomotion. Got a notion that you're
voices.
Well, hello, everyone.
Did you just wake up?
Well, I didn't know it was coming to me. Well, you are listening to Queer Voices, and we're still Jack Belinsky, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, and J.D. Doyle, and Glenn and Ellie are at the control board.
Well, Glenn's asleep.
Well,
we're all half asleep.
Yeah. Okay.
He's asleep at the switch.
No, no. What would we do without him? We know, don't we?
Well, I tell you what, this chair leans back so far that it's like being in a dentist's chair.
I see. Well, hopefully there'll be no dentist coming in because that's, yeah, torturous. I would be remiss if I did not bring up the fact that A Sisters is holding their Decadent Dessert event next Sunday, October the 8th, from 4 to 7 p.m. at South Beach at 810 Pacific Street, and that is their biggest fundraiser of the year, and they call this one Decadent Desserts and More because they're going to have hors d'oeuvres as well as sweet things. There will be chocolate for us, Jennifer.
I know. I'm going to be a sweet thing there.
Well, I know you. I know that's right. And
then take a lot of chocolate.
There'll be some entertainment as well, including MC Nancy Ford, I believe, and the I said that, and I'm going, no, wait a minute. I think she's emceeing the Women's Festival.
We didn't mention that earlier, did we?
So maybe Nancy Ford's not even going to be there. But I have a feeling she might be.
She might be there just having some chocolate.
But I do know that the Women's Chorus will be part of the Bayou City Women's
Chorus. Are they going to sing?
We'll sing,
okay.
Yes. Yes, they will do that. And the rest of us will indulge ourselves in chocolate and goodies and
goodies and stuff like that. And I would be remiss if I didn't point out that this Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the GLBT Community Center, the Houston GLBT Political Caucus has its general meeting starting at 7 p.m. That's 3400 Montrose, Suite 207. And those of you, if you're not a member and you'd like to come and see what the caucus is doing, the speaker this week is James Robertson, Jr. He is the president of the Black Dems organization.
The Black Dems?
Black Dems, that's what they say, the Black Dems. And talking about coalition building.
That just sounds kind of funny to me.
Well, I'm already remiss, so I'll pass.
Well, okay. We want to thank all the folks that were on the show with us tonight. Our wonderful friend David Elliott from Washington, D.C. with his Inside the Beltway and Beyond report. Charmin Petrie and Shirley Knight with the Houston Women's Festival. And when is that, J.D.?
October 21st.
At Jones Plaza downtown. Dr. Susan Lawrence, author of The Creating a Healing Society, who will be addressing the Triangle AIDS Network next week. And those wonderful folks, Adriana Perez and Michael Ferris from the Alley, their Act Out series with their first show, Much Ado About Nothing. And, of course, those folks at KPFA in Los Angeles that produced This Way Out.
SBKPFK.
Okay. KPFK?
KPFK rather than KPFA.
Oh, she's remiss again.
Yes. Well, there I am.
You're being remiss.
And so, coming up next week?
Next week, we will be talking about National Coming Out Day, which is October 11th. Also talking to the people who are doing the Laramie Project, which will be running from October 20th
to that's 22nd. A great play.
Yes.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
The anniversary of Matthew Shepard's death. Sally Huffer will be joining us to talk about the new groups and activities at the Montrose Counseling Center, such as Coming Out Group, How Appropriate, and the HIV AIDS training for HIV AIDS on October 20th, and she has some other really special news. Also, the Houston Equal Rights Alliance early voting. That's coming up real quick, and voting is going to be rather exciting and lengthy, so we'll have a lot to talk about that. And, of course, calendar, community news, and other gossip that we usually talk about.
And music.
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 And once again, a very sincere happy birthday to Jennifer Renee. We're going to go into chocolate cake now.
Oh, good.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Walensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Walensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
A Fiction of Authenticity, Contemporary Africa Abroad, a new exhibition at Blaffer Gallery, presents new work in painting, photography, sculpture, installation, video, and performance by a selection of the most prominent African artists working in Europe and the United States, representing an important generation just before or during the post-colonial era in Africa between 1956 and 1975. These artists challenge prevailing notions about Africa and the largely Western desire for an authentic African art. A Fiction of Authenticity is on view through November the 11th at Blaffer Gallery, the Art Museum of the University of Houston, KPFT, Houston.
The 10th annual Project Roadhouses Arts and Music Festival is Saturday, October 21st and Sunday, October 22nd. The festival starts at the corner of Live Oak and Holman and extends to Dowling and Elgin. Project Roadhouses Arts and Music Festival is free and open to the public. For inquiries or information regarding sponsorship, volunteering, and entertainment, please contact Project Roadhouses at 713-526-7662. KPFT, Houston.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.